Everything that we did was basically documented. If it didn't turn out right, we'd cross it out and redocument the right way.
Yeah.
So, and you know that the key to any successful franchise is consistency. You've got to make sure that whatever you can get at the coffee club in Darwin CBD, you can get in Perth CBD or, you know, in Wagga Wagga.
Consistent across
Townsville, the yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, and that goes with service as well. So that consistency of great service is probably one of the hardest things to do.
Welcome to A Table for Two, inspiring and educational interviews and stories with the best operators, owners, and entrepreneurs in business and the hospitality industry. My name is Phil Halani, and on today's episode, we chat to John Lazaru, one of the founders of The Coffee Club, which now has over 400 locations worldwide. John's journey in hospitality started a little different to most successful hospitality operators. At the age of 15, he left school to take on a hairdressing apprenticeship. 2 years later, he quit his job and bought an existing salon, taking two of the seniors at his previous workplace while still doing his apprenticeship. He continued hairdressing for over 10 years and had a very successful career, but one of his biggest mistakes was he was the face of the salon, which put pressure on him to be at the store 7 days a week, where he felt trapped. In 1989, two of his friends, both named Emmanuel, were opening a coffee shop called The Coffee Club and approached him to help out. So he split his time between the salon and the coffee club. But it didn't take long for him to sell his salon and become a partner. After opening 7 company stores in 5 years, they decided to start franchising with massive success. They opened over 180 stores before selling 50% of their company to Minor International in 2007, one of Thailand's largest resort companies. They then sold another 20% 7 years later, setting up the original founders for life. The Coffee Club started the cafe scene and is one of Australia's biggest success stories. I'm very grateful to John for taking his time to chat to me about his journey. One of John's greatest assets is his ability to make people feel welcome and comfortable, and is a massive reason for the success of the Coffee Club. John Lazaru, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Phil. Nice to see you. And welcome to sunny Queensland, by the way.
Not sunny today, but...
Yeah, I know. Well, people can't see that.
But a bad day in Queensland is still a good day in Sydney.
Yes.
It's a good day in Sydney.
Yes,
so,
right.
John, it's... thank you for your time. I know you're very busy and you got a lot going on, but you, from the day I reached out to you, you happy to chat to me. We've tried to organise this a few times, but COVID had other plans.
Yeah.
So
COVID's got many plans for other things, regardless.
That's it. So I guess for me, the reason why I really wanted to get you on, obviously, what you've achieved has been amazing, but my first coffee club experience was in Penrith.
Okay.
Penrith Westfields Coffee Club. It was the first cafe that I went to that I was blown away by.
Okay.
And then they opened Coffee Club in the Nepean River, and that like set records.
It's next level, that one.
Next level. So Jeremy, I know Jeremy well.
Yeah, nice guys.
He done some, yeah, Jeremy and his partner.
Jeremy and Aaron.
Aaron, that's right, yeah. So, I mean, it blew me away, and from an early age, I'd always wanted to know more about the story and the, okay, and how it happened. So I'd love to know your journey. I know you started as a hairdresser.
Yeah.
Can we start with that?
Sure. Okay. There was a career before even hairdressing.
Really?
I was working in a bakery from the age of 12. I'd go to the bakery in West End. I grew up in West End, which is a very ethnic sort of area. And I'd go to the bakery around 2 o'clock in the morning, finish at 6 in the morning, go home, have a shower, and go to school. I knew from a very young age that, you know, work is going to get you what
work
you
ethic
need to do. Yeah.
Yep.
So, and I had a very good work ethic that was instilled in me by my father, and I hope that I've instilled it into my children as well, and grandchildren. So that was my first job. Then I went into... I didn't want to continue school. At the age of 15, I was very good at school, but I knew that I wasn't going to be an academic.
It wasn't for you?
No, it wasn't for me. And it's not for everybody. Mm. And I'll go back to that with Brisbane State High, which was my high school. I knew that I wasn't going to be a doctor or a dentist, you know. And I know my parents, they continually say that they migrated to Australia for us to get a better life, a better education. But it wasn't for me.
So were they disappointed that you didn't want to?
Extremely disappointed. So, but I knew that I wasn't going to stay at school. So at the age of 15, when you could leave school, which is after grade 10, I was looking for work. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I decided that I was going to go into, I think it was called a Commonwealth Employment Service back then,
okay,
which is where you go. I'm not really sure what it's called now, but it's an office where you go to and they promote jobs, they're advertising jobs.
Yeah.
I really can't think of what it's called now, but I haven't been in one since. That's probably why. nonetheless, I went to the Commonwealth Employment Service and I'm looking at all these jobs, you know, mechanic, and I'm thinking, no, that's a dirty job, you know, cleaner, no, I don't want to do that. Sales assistant, no, I couldn't be bothered. It's just staying on my feet, selling things. And hairdresser was there, and I thought, I had a really good rapport with the hairdresser that was next to my uncle's office. My uncle was a real estate agent. And I had a really good rapport with the hairdressers in there and one of the girls I went to school with. So I used to see her all the time, Irene. And I thought, hairdressing, this is an interesting job. So I went home and I said to my parents that I'm going to leave school and I want to be a hairdresser. Hairdresser? Yeah, I always wanted to be a hairdresser. And that was a lie, of course. But it was a clean job and, you know, hairdressers, I guess I was very arty and creative.
Yeah, okay.
So hairdressing it was. I got a job at Raymond's, which was, he was a very cool man, a very hard man too, but I learned a lot there. The first 2 years of my apprenticeship I did with Hair by Raymond. I remember my first pay packet, it was $27 as a first year apprentice.
What year was that in?
1978.
Okay.
Yes, 1978. $27 was my first pay packet for the week, and I was working as a disc jockey on Friday and Saturday nights at a nightclub in Brisbane, okay, CBD, yep, called Nights. But because it was me and two other guys, myself and two other guys, Chris Economides and Sam Clemente, because we were all underage, we were all at the same grade, but we were all great dancers and we had a bit of a reputation and we all had, I suppose, great personalities. So we were DJs. And I would earn $150 a night.
Wow.
For working as
compared
a DJ.
Compared to
$27
a week.
That's wow. Right. So I think that's where my love of, you know, being smart about what sort of work you do came into it. But anyway, I ended up leaving hairdressing after my second year. I hadn't finished my apprenticeship.
Okay.
But what I did was I bought a hairdressing salon. And I took two or three of my seniors that I used to work with and brought them into the salon because I had to have a senior working with me so that I could finish my apprenticeship.
Fair enough. Oh, wow, clever.
But I was their boss.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it sounds like from early age you had that entrepreneur spirit.
Yeah, I guess so. But it was pretty unheard of at the time. Mm. You know, it was everybody was going, you know, you haven't finished your apprenticeship and you own the salon. Yeah. I didn't want to work for anybody else.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Sorry, I've got to have my morning coffee.
Of course.
I continued hairdressing and for many years there, probably 11 years, I think. Had a great team of staff working, but I think my biggest mistake in hairdressing was that I called the salon Yanni's Hair Design. Yanni is my Greek name.
Okay.
So anytime any new customer walks through the door, client walks through the door, they wanted Yanni to do their hair. Mm. So I had amazing staff that were working around me, but they wanted Yanni.
So they'll just wait for you and your staff are just hanging around.
Correct. So I became a prisoner to that business.
Wow.
And that's when I realised that I'll only be as successful as fast as my hands are in hairdressing.
Yeah, okay.
So that's when it sort of turned sour for me. I continued. I enjoyed it. But that's when my two then partners, Emmanuel Kokoris and Emmanuel Drivers, they had come up with an idea that they wanted to open a coffee shop.
Okay.
They knew that I wanted to get out of hairdressing. And that's when the relationship started with the coffee club.
So you finish hairdressing, you sell your business.
That was in 1989.
1989. Yeah. That's the first year the coffee club was open. And then you joined...
2nd of November 1989.
Wow. And then you joined the following year.
No.
You joined with them.
I joined with them on opening day.
Wow.
I was there every second day. So I would commit to hairdressing appointments one day,
okay,
and coffee club the next day.
Really?
And then after 12 months, I had to make a decision. And I still recall the day that I told my parents that I'm going into the coffee. And my father said, how can you possibly support children from making coffee?
Wow.
So, yeah, I remember that.
That's, well, I mean, it's good to see what you've, you're able to, so.
Well, for them, they saw that, because I was only like five blocks away. My salon was only five blocks away from their, where the home that I grew up in.
And the salon was making good money. It was
Yeah. But again, I was a prisoner to.
Of course. You had to be there every day, all day.
That's right.
So, I mean, but prior, during this period at all, was there any experience you had in education, in hospitality?
Yes. When I had a bit of a dabble in hospitality in a few restaurants. So the Greek Taverna restaurant was owned at the time by George Simons. And both my wife and I used to go and work there at night times. Again, to get ahead.
You know?
I mean, had a successful business as a hairdresser, but
it's that work ethic.
That's right.
100%.
So what do you do between 7 o'clock at night and 2 o'clock in the morning? You work at a Greek restaurant. Not every night. But anyway, yeah, both my wife Maria and I were there, and we also brought in a whole bunch of Greek young kids to work there. Okay. I was managing the restaurant. I didn't start off as a manager. My auntie Maria Laudikos, Polykiotis at the time, but Maria Laudikos was the manager there, and she brought us in to help my cousin and I, and then a series of events happened and I ended up managing the store.
Wow.
Evening, yes.
Wow, that's crazy.
So, and then there was Gambaro's Seafood Restaurant, Michael Gambaro, bless his soul, he passed away last year or the year before, I don't know, I'm confused with COVID. But Michael also took me under his wing. I started off as a waiter, just at nights, as a young 20-year-old. And I think at the age of, at the age of 18. And at the age of 19, 20, I was the youngest maitre d' in Gambaro's.
Wow.
Don't ask me how I just end up, you know, going for gold. Near enough isn't good enough. I want the top.
Yeah, and I think just from knowing you for a short period, I think you just said it yourself, your work ethic, but it's also you're very personable. So straight away, people connect with you. And
Michael Gambaro was the king of hospitality, as was George Simons from the Greek Taverna. Both those men taught me how to be hospitable, not about hospitality, but how to be hospitable, how to be welcoming, how to embrace the customer and make them feel like they're 100% comfortable within your environment. Once a customer is 100% comfortable in your environment, which is the restaurant, you're besties.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
100%. And I love that because it's how we live, how we run our business, and it's all about being hospitable.
Hospitality. People don't understand hospitality, and I don't think it's something that you can teach somebody. It's either you've either got it or you haven't. And I'm so fortunate that both those guys, George Simons and Michael Gambaro, they saw that spark of hospitality in me, and that's what has made me so passionate, because I was trained, I was mentored by two amazing and geniuses at hospitality.
So you think they played a big part in your success for the coffee club?
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Well, in me, yes. So all that I've learned from Michael and Gambaro's and George and the Greek Taverna is instilled in me. So I took that to the coffee club as well.
Yeah, I love that. And obviously, you know, being the Greek background, you're hospitable as it is already, you know. So
exactly.
Straight away I walked into your apartment and coffee and...
I haven't got the Greek sweets.
So talk to me about the experience of joining the coffee club, from going from managing the venue to becoming a partner.
Okay, so I joined the coffee club boys, Manuel Kokoris and Manuel Drivers, as I call them, the Emmanuels. They approached me and said, you know, that they knew I was looking for to get out of hairdressing. And I thought, what a great opportunity, you know, the coffee club. So both the Emmanuels, they had a great concept in their head about how they wanted it to be. So based on the Cotton Club, which is an old New York 1930s type concept.
Wow, okay.
So that's how the first store, and the first several stores were all built, you know, with that whole theme of the Cotton Club. Obviously, we called ourselves the Coffee Club. I was there when we were putting all the menus together. So both the Emmanuels didn't work in the Coffee Club. I worked in the Coffee
Club. Did they have hospitality experience?
They had hospitality experience, but one was working in a fruit shop and the other one had a chicken franchise. They're both very clever in what they do, but they don't have that front of house. You know, they've never worked in a coffee club.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So in hindsight, it's a great partnership. We've all got our different strengths.
Of course.
And mine just happens to be the front man.
People, front of house. Yeah,
exactly. So we started the coffee club on the 2nd of November 1989. I still don't understand why I even did this, but I did, and I'm so fortunate that I did. I took the name and number of the first customer.
Of opening day.
The very first customer. Her name is Doreen Crooks, and she's a lovely lady. Continually keep in touch with her. I'll call her on the 2nd of November and say happy coffee club birthday. I'll always give her a call at Christmas time. COVID sort of ruined the
catch-ups.
The catch-ups, yeah. But she's in a retirement village now, and down at Cleveland. And I really can't wait to go and see her because her husband's passed away. And
And what was the reason why you took your number? What was
I just told you? I do not know. But I knew that something big was about to happen.
Wow. I mean,
so we've called Doreen and her husband, who's now passed, Bevan, back for our 10th anniversary, our 20th,
wow.
Our 25th, you know.
I think what you just said about not being able to teach people hospitality, that's exactly what it is, right there, what you did, you know, calling, getting a number and saving the details. It's like you said, you don't know why you did it. But
So I recall the conversation, and it was early in the morning, it was like 8:05 or something like that. Good morning, how can I help you? Could I have a cappuccino, please? Sure. So back in the days, we only had like skim milk or
full cream.
That was it. There wasn't...
None of these almonds.
almond and, yeah, soya. Anyway, so there you go. How much is that? She said to me, and I said, no, it's on the house. You're our very first customer. And what's your name? And she said, it's Doreen Crookston. And yours? I said, John Lazarou. Went and sat down. She comes up with her coffee about 10 minutes later. We're all sort of, you know, it was raining. It was a horrible day, by the way. We're all in there and tidying up and getting everything ready. And she comes up, walks the cup back to the counter and says, that was a lovely cup of coffee. Do you think I could have another one? I said, of course you can. She goes, well, I'll have a second one, but only if you let me pay for it. I said, done deal. So we were talking while she was having a coffee and I got to know her and yeah. So
that's amazing. That's such a beautiful story, and I think that's hospitality right there.
She's played a big part in
that's
in
really beautiful
our celebrations.
And so with every opening of a store, I don't know if up to this anymore because there's 400 stores worldwide, but do you still do that with all your stores, first coffee customer?
A lot of the staff do, yeah.
That's really cool.
All of our franchisees, they know that story and they like to duplicate it,
I
which
love
is
that.
Great. I do too.
Absolutely. So, yeah. All right. So with the coffee club, obviously, like I said, we're over 400 stores, you know, presently, but what was it that always planned to open multiple stores?
Look, we opened the first one. Well, when I say we, it was Emmanuel. I was just their duty manager because they had a store manager who was their cousin, James Kalouris. And he's a lovely guy as well. He went on to open his own little coffee shops around the place. But, we opened the first store on the 2nd of November 1989, and then I think it was January, 12 months later, the second store was about to open up.
Okay, so there was
the
always...
CBD.
So there was always planned to do more than one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was something easy to duplicate. you know, the menus were all laid out nicely. We had a system of how we fill our cabinets. Mm. You know, stock sells stock. So we needed our cabinets to be full all the time. The layout of the counter, the layout of the refrigerators, everything was just duplicated, and everything was written down so that
system-wise.
Yeah, so that if I wasn't there or if the manager wasn't there, the staff knew exactly what to do. You know, there was other managers. We had Maureen, I forgot her surname, but Toomey, Maureen Toomey. She was one of the managers as well. So all of us managers there, we knew exactly how to do everything.
Mm.
We agreed on it, and then the staff just followed suit because it was all written down.
And was it all the first couple of stores? Was it franchised or was it company
no,
owned?
No, we had we opened seven company stores, I think, in 5 years. And I joined the partnership on the third store.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, because so I knew that I wanted to be involved in this business and not just as an employee.
Of course.
So.
And so you went from duty manager to then managing stores.
To managing the second store.
Yeah.
And then the third store, I became a 50% partner in that store. And then the third store, the fourth store, which was in the Brisbane CBD again. Once again, I had 50% share of that. And then I opened another store for the boys, and then the seventh one, and that's when we sort of amalgamated everything and I became a partner in the whole coffee club group.
I love that. That's a great lesson right there, where work hard, put yourself in a good position,
yeah,
and the opportunity can be pretty amazing if you work hard for it. So with, I mean, back then, what was the coffee scene like? What was it?
It was relatively new. So 1988, if you weren't even born in 1988, were you?
86.
Okay, right. So you were 2 years old. So in 1988, we had Expo, World Expo, which basically turned Brisbane into a cosmopolitan city. We were a sleepy little town before that. Everything sort of closed at 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon. Restaurants in suburbs were not the norm. You could probably only get takeaway or kebab, you know, after 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
There was only some relatively well-known restaurants, and just a handful, I guess, that that you would go to. It was completely different. But after Expo, like during Expo for a six-month period, we could go to the Expo site, which is now South Bank, and there was restaurants, coffee shops, bars that were open till all hours of the morning. And it showed us that, it also made us wake up to the fact that we've got the Brisbane River, which was a remarkable, yeah, you know, an unbelievable location on the banks of the river, and we should be utilising them. Mm. But I guess it was that series of events that happened that made Brisbane sort of wake up and we use the banks of the river, and we now have lots of restaurants, bars,
of course,
coffee shops that are open till well after midnight. Mm. But that was our original thing, that Expo's finished. We've gone back to a sleepy town. Let's open a late night coffee shop / food.
Mm.
Very good atmosphere, you know, like a nice atmosphere. It's not just like a, you know, a dingy place where you can just grab a cup of coffee. We had a beautiful fit out, very retro. It was unique.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Coffee Club, I mean, it really did start the scene for a lot of venues. I mean, for me personally, it inspired me, like, where I thought, oh, hold up, I can actually open a cafe and be profitable and make money and love what I do, you know. So Coffee Club has, I think, is responsible for a lot of other cafes opening.
Yeah, look, we hear that, which is great.
Yeah, you guys were the pioneers in it, right? So,
well, look, we also went into suburban strips, like out in the suburbs,
yeah.
And it gave those suburbs their local coffee club.
Mm. Well, I mean, Penrith's the perfect example of that, exactly. You know. So yeah. I think it was one of the busiest stores you guys had at one point. So when did you know you had something really special with the coffee club?
For me, my a light bulb moment was when somebody asked, a customer, no idea who the customer was, but a customer asked, is this an American franchise? So you can imagine that just blew my mind.
Because America was a pinnacle back then.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You know, you if somebody compares you to an American business, that's a be-all and end-all, but not so much now.
Yeah, now,
we're doing
great
here in Australia.
I think we're doing better, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The quality is a lot higher. So that was a moment where you thought, wow, we got something special here. 7 stores in, and then you start franchising after that. Talk to us about that process. I mean, you can still manage it at 7 stores. You got 3 partners.
Yep.
Three of you in total.
There's 3 of us in total. We made sure that everything was... So Manuel Kokoris, he came from a franchise business. He had a Red Rooster franchise, or one of those chicken franchises. So he was, you know, he's responsible basically for the manuals side of thing.
Operations so, and
things like that. Yeah, exactly. You know, he dots his I's and crosses his T's. Admittedly, he didn't know what he was doing within the coffee club stores, so I had to do all that, and we engaged one of our staff to write it all. But, you know, he first and foremost, he's responsible for understanding the franchise model. Mm. So, you know, very grateful there that he had that experience. Everything that we did was basically documented. If it didn't turn out right, we'd cross it out and redocument the right way.
Yeah.
So, and you know that the key to any successful franchise is consistency. You've got to make sure that whatever you can get at the coffee club in Darwin CBD, you can get in Perth CBD or, you know, in Wagga Wagga.
Consistent across
Townsville, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, and that goes with service as well. So that consistency of great service is probably one of the hardest things to do. So
consistency is the hardest thing. Absolutely. Yeah. So when during your journey, and obviously, you know, we'll talk about, you know, you guys sold a bit of your share to another company and you're still involved, but when was your biggest challenge during the early days before you sold a stake
before
of business?
Before we sold, I think it was it was either 96 or 97 where we had to open 24 or 25 stores in 1 year.
What?
Something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was. And obviously we couldn't get... we didn't have all the franchisees in place. So that was like a make or break year. But we pulled through.
And during those tough times, challenges, what was it like mentally for you? I mean, going through that?
Here's where I think a partnership like that, like we have, really works. Because I was responsible for running the business, the shop fronts.
Yeah.
The other two were responsible for everything else. So
the back end.
The back end. So I may not have been aware of the severity of the problem or the shit that we were about.
Okay.
Sorry that I said that.
That's okay.
Yeah, but I may not have been aware of how serious the situation was. And these guys, they pulled us through.
Wow. I mean, everyone played their role, right?
Everyone played their role perfectly.
So one of the Emmanuels he came from a franchise background.
Yep.
Yourself was front of house. And there was another Emmanuel. What was his role?
Emmanuel Drivers. His strength is property.
Okay.
Property and, you
location.
Know, he's willing and dealing with the finances.
What a great partnership.
Yeah. Three very, very different men.
Wow.
And a partnership that's... you know, lasted for 32 years. It's 32 years
now.
Wow.
That was one of my questions later on, but we're talking about it now. How do you maintain the respect and the friendship during business? Because I'm sure there's blow-ups.
Absolutely. Look, when we first started off, we were basically all together and, you know, we all in the same sort of life situation. We all had young kids. We'd hang out, blah, blah, blah. As time went on and our kids grew up and we've all got grandkids now, you know, we may not see each other all the time.
Yeah.
But when we're at work, and plus we're sort of semi-retired now, so but when we're at the office, you know, it's, g'day, how you going, you know?
Catch up and... Yeah. Nice. And for yourself personally, obviously at the start you're in the stores running, making sure the team's running well. How has your role changed over time?
Okay, so... I went from running the store and writing everything down of how we want it to be done, to, I guess, training new people, to, then we got a head office at some stage, and I was responsible for marketing. So all of a sudden, I'm a marketer.
No marketing background.
No marketing background, no. But look, with the help of the you know, the various ad agencies that we had, we put together some very clever creatives.
Yep.
Where Will I Meet You?
I love that.
Yep. I love that too.
Yeah, because generally it's a question, where do you want to meet? Where can we meet? So I think...
It's an everyday question that somebody absolutely. Will ask somebody.
Yeah.
Where will I meet you? And we always want the answer to be the coffee club.
Love that. And so, you know, you're more in marketing. Is that your role now more like...
No, well, for the past, you know, from, say, year 7 or 8 through to 5 years ago, yes, I'd say.
Wow.
But now I'm sort of
semi-retired. Sitting on the board, more semi-retired. Yeah, sitting on the board.
And if the marketing team want to run anything past me, I'm there for them to do that.
Yeah.
And I love that.
That's awesome. So. And with franchising now, there's a lot of companies, you know, they'll start, they'll get to 5 stores, 10 stores, they have growing pains, get to 20. It's very rare they get to 20 because that's, I think 10 to 20 is the real
yeah.
breaking point. How did you deal with the franchisees? And I mean, was it a different time back then? What?
I don't know if it was a different time, or yeah, but yes, it was a different time, sorry, but I don't know if that's the answer. We weren't, I could say right up until about 100 franchisees, I would know each and every one of them.
Wow.
I mean, I know each and every one of them now, but not on a personal basis. I just know that that person is from...
Of course.
You know, whereas, you know, I knew... franchisee from Perth, Karen Lawler Lewis. I know she's got 2 boys. She's one of her boys lives in Sydney. You know, they're studying. I knew basically everything about them. Kushla is another franchisee from Perth, Mandra store. She's got a daughter named Angel. I know her mum and her dad. Her mum passed away of cancer. You know, we had a really close relationship, but obviously now we've got 300 franchisees in Australia. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
I can't get to every store once a year,
yeah.
which is what I always used to do.
And so, I mean, that's usually the hard thing when you start growing. I mean, 100 stores is just blows my mind to think what you guys have created when you the first 100. But I think that's where, I mean, franchisees always want to feel supported and make sure they have
correct.
That, you know, good people around them.
Correct. And we have a great support team at our office. They're all corporate people.
Yeah.
I think the first 100 franchisees experienced the whole personable, you know.
Okay.
John Lazarou, Manuel Kokoros, Manuel Drivers, you know, we knew all of them by name. We wow. knew their family. We got invited to their kids' weddings. You know, it's all that sort of thing.
It's beautiful.
It was, and we would call them the Coffee Club family. But now it's a very, it's a different beast yeah. now.
So how many stores did you get to before you guys sold a part of the business?
I can't answer that because I have bad memory. But I know it was 2008. We must have had at least 200 stores,
wow.
I'm pretty sure.
That's amazing. And I just think the journey to do that without any investment before that period, I think is just out of this world. And what you guys have achieved is so special. Look, and so how has hospitality changed for you over the last 30 years?
Okay, I think we came in at a really good time because back in the 80s, and again, you were 2, weren't you? So you really
86,
weren't. Yeah, okay, you were 4. Yes, you were 6, whatever. 80s and 90s. You found that all these businesses were having long lunches that cost $2,000 and went on to become a dinner. And they'd be putting it on their corporate card. Once all that stopped, fringe benefits stopped, they weren't able to do that anymore. So they still wanted to go out to somewhere nice to be able to have a decent food in a nice environment with their clients. Coffee Club came in at the perfect time. So for, you know, $30, $40, 2 people could eat.
Yeah,
it wasn't okay. $2,000.
Yeah, okay.
We didn't have all the champagne. We were licensed. You could have a glass of wine, bottle of champagne, you know, a whiskey. a gin and tonic, whatever. You could still have that. And we were beautifully themed, the restaurant, very retro, in a beautiful location on the banks of the Brisbane River. What more could you ask for?
Yeah.
So I think that's what, you know, it was right location, right timing, right product.
Mm.
So.
And so, I mean, from a you know, you talk about timing and things like that, and you guys have obviously evolved over time. Is there something where you're still, you're excited and very confident about the future for the coffee club over the next 10 years?
Look, I think we'll always continue to evolve and remain on trend and in some cases trendsetters. We'll always be relevant. Mm. I'm pretty sure of that. And yeah. Without sounding cocky, I mean...
No, that's yeah. You have the right to say
that. Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, we've got a great team of people working at our corporate office. And I know that our business is in very capable hands.
How many people in head office?
Look, pre-COVID, there was probably about 140.
Okay.
Now with the COVID situation, social distancing, we've got a lot of people working from home. Of course. You can imagine that the whole feel and vibe of the head office is not as it used to be like 2.5, 3 years ago. But I'm hoping and I'm positive that it'll get back to that.
Once a bit of normality, things will go back to normal. Yeah. That's the way I look at it. So, yeah. With your French, with your shops, were you always breakfast, lunch, dinner?
Okay, here's the thing. So our breakfast was available throughout the whole day.
All day breakfast, yeah.
All day breakfast. So we didn't have a breakfast menu, a lunch menu, and a dinner menu. We had one menu that all items were available at any given time. Now, our sources tell us that that's how McDonald's brought in their all-day breakfast when they saw... that's how they opened up to have breakfast.
Really?
They'd never had a breakfast trade before.
Really?
They would open at 11, yeah.
Wow.
So it was in Australia that a McDonald's opened for breakfast and then that followed suit.
So again, trendsetters.
There you go.
Wow. And I mean, that's Australia is known, especially in the McDonald's industry, where they'll trial the McCafe concept. We did well here in New Zealand. They took it to the world.
That's right. Yeah, they took it to the world.
It's amazing. So you guys take the credit for all-day breakfast.
That's exactly right. You know, they're marketing all-day breakfast, and I'm thinking, so what? We've been doing it for 10 years.
And so with your models, obviously you guys evolved over time. You had kiosks, restaurant style.
Yeah, we got the various style of storefronts. Kiosks, what have you, you know, containers. We're always being innovative and trying out. And, you know, we've got lots of different views within the office that of what to do and, you know, but we'll give it a go.
Was there ever a period in the coffee club where you thought you guys made a decision which could have been very costly, other than that period where you said you opened 20 stores and it was tough, but...
Yeah, there has been some decisions that have been costly, you know, whether it's to do with coffee club or acquisitions, yep. But yeah.
And
we live and learn by these mistakes.
That's how we learn, grow and learn,
exactly.
Right? And so with that, were you guys early on, before you guys sold a part of the company in 2008, were you acquiring other businesses during that period?
We have done.
Yep.
And they have been costly.
Okay, yeah. It's a great lesson. Like you said, an expensive lesson. But
yeah.
So in 2008, you and your partner sold 50% of the business to Minor International.
Correct.
Now, and then another 20% 7 years later.
Yeah.
Amazing achievement for what you've created. And to obviously keep a part of it showed that you want to still be part of what you're doing. But the minute you give away equity, it means you kind of lose control.
We have lost control. The thing is that, you know, we sit on the board. We're not involved so much with the day-to-day running of the business, but everybody at head office basically knows, you know, the what we've started and the legacy that we would love to leave behind, you know, when we exit Coffee Club and then exit the planet, I suppose.
Wow. And so with that, I mean, was there ever a feeling of regret? Like, this is your baby. This is your business that you built from the ground up. I mean, was there ever that regret?
You know, we've got... I can't reiterate this enough. We have a great team of staff that work for us. But at the end of the day, I've always said that nobody feels for the business like the owner.
Mm.
And unless you've got hurt money in it. And that's a sad thing to say. But like I said, you know,
we're 100% true.
We're surrounded by people that are passionate about the brand. At the end of the day, they're going to get their pay packet whether we make money or not.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, that's right. And that hurt money, and I think that's why it's always important anyone invests, they have to put sweat capital out because correct. Otherwise they won't feel.
That's why I feel that franchising is a great way to grow your business in a passionate and loyal way.
Yeah. Is franchising, I mean, it's copped a lot the last few years. Is franchising something you see the future, is in the future? Or?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah. Franchising is definitely a way of the future. Yeah. It will always be around. Look, it's sad that there are some franchisors out there that have ruined it for the good ones. There are some shonky franchisors out there that really are in it just to take that first lot of money and do a runner, basically, you know. Yeah. They're not going to support the franchisee. But a franchisee comes on board because they know that there should be a support system and support people in place to assist these people with their new business. So they're assuming that the franchisor has already been through all the hurdles.
Correct.
Understands the business and is there to assist the franchisee to make them successful.
Mm.
You're only as successful as your franchisees are.
Of course. Yeah. Well, exactly. That's why you got to give them the support and the love.
Correct.
Yeah.
And
so.
We've realised that from the beginning. Mm. We're not there to scam anyone. We're there to ensure that our brand grows through our franchisees.
Yeah. And
so we'll do everything within our power to support them.
And then, like you said, the first 100 is always called the Coffee Club family, right? So was there a reason why you decided to sell at that time?
They, Minor, the company, they courted us for, you know, maybe the best part of 2 years.
Wow.
So, and the time was right. And it was a great decision.
Yeah.
Because jumping into bed with a company like Minor, which now have footprints, you know, in all of the continents, that's going to grow our brand.
Yeah, so that's a big part. That was the next question where, I mean, that growth, obviously, do you think you could have done it without them?
No.
Okay.
We would have grown successfully in Australia, very successfully in Australia, but it would have taken us a lot longer to get into all the other countries that we're in now.
Yeah. And working with them, obviously you're still a partner with them and
yes, the transition. And they're great people to work with.
Yeah, they've been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Couldn't ask for better partners.
Who's the number one franchisee you've had that has been an amazing operator? Is there one person that comes to mind?
Oh, there's many that come to mind for various reasons. Wow, and I know that they're all going to hear this podcast, so I don't want to mention any names.
That's fair. You don't want to play favourites.
Yeah, I don't. It's you got two kids, haven't you?
Two boys, yeah.
So which one's your favourite? Tell me.
Well, the youngest.
Yeah, I don't think
that so. Won't listen to this podcast, but you're 100% right. It's very hard to play favourites.
Yeah, it is hard.
So.
And you know, there are different franchisees that I'm close with for different reasons.
Of course.
You know, we had a franchisee who's now works within the system. I won't mention names, but he was so passionate about training staff that I've never seen anybody be so thorough. He reminds me of me when I was in the business.
That's awesome. You know, focused on people and...
Yep.
Yeah. So talking about that and people and culture, I mean, culture is one of the most important things in the business. If your people are happy in the right, trained world, looked after, then they're going to give the best guest experience.
Correct.
What did you do? What did you do differently to everyone else? Why were you guys so good at with your culture and your training?
Again, I'll say that it has to come across as being genuine. If it's not genuine, the customer's going to sense that they're fake and they don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely a people's person. I can easily make somebody feel at home. My aim is to ensure that every customer walks out of our store with a smile on their face and the ability to tell whoever they catch up with, go and see that guy at the coffee club. He's friggin' awesome,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like at the cafe where, you know, you become they start as a guest and then they become friends and then they invite you to weddings and parties.
This is what I say to everybody. Turn every customer that walks through your store into a friend.
Mm.
A friend will always remain loyal and they'll always come and see you in the within your area. They're not going to go somewhere else.
They want to support you 100%. And I mean, that first experience of that first customer where you got a name and number and you've kept in contact for 30 years, what's your most memorable guest experience that you've given or one of your staff members or franchisees has given? Can you think of anything off the top of your head?
Well, I can think of one that's not memorable and I'm happy to share that one.
Please, yeah.
It was at Eagle Street Pier, would have been 1990, and these people came in and they said, love the look of the store. Are we able to use it for a photo shoot? Great pride. Of course you can, you know. So I got as much Coffee Club logo in the shot as
marketing.
That was Keith Urban.
No way.
Yes.
You didn't know.
No, I didn't know who Keith Urban was. That's one of my most memorable, oh my God, what a dumb.
That's really cool. But I mean, because you didn't know, you probably played it cool, so it was
fine. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, but hang on, we're talking 1989. I don't think Keith Urban was Keith Urban then.
Okay, so it wasn't, yeah.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It still doesn't look like he does today. We've got a photo somewhere.
That's really cool. That's very cool.
Most memorable, we've had, it was at the coffee club on the corner of Adelaide and Albert Street. When that store was open, I owned half of that store and the two boys, the coffee club, owned the other half. And it's across the road from City Hall in the CBD. So one street away from the Queen Street Mall. And there was a couple that met there. And this is before social media. Otherwise it would be plastered everywhere. There was a couple that met there and they wanted to have their wedding there because we had a mezzanine floor.
That's cool.
So, yeah, we had the mezzanine floor, their wedding.
That's beautiful.
Up on the mezzanine floor. And we catered.
That's so beautiful. And I think Coffee Club is part of their life forever.
Yes,
I think
of
it's
course.
So beautiful, yeah. So you mentioned social media, and obviously it's a big part of hospitality. I spoke to Simon yesterday and from Hellenica, and he said that it's the best thing but also the worst thing that's ever happened.
Oh, for sure.
What's your view on it?
Look, it is the worst and the best thing that could happen. Mm. So, sadly, there are people, you know, it's never happened to us. Well, not that I know of, but a friend of mine in hospitality was telling me that his customer, who he got everything that he asked for, the meals were perfect, everything was superb. He left one tiny little bit of food on his plate and he said, there's something wrong with this food, it's not tasting right. And he says, well, you seem to have eaten most of it.
99% of it.
Yeah. And, you know, there's two spoonfuls left. And you know when somebody's scamming you. And, Shane, my mate, said, this guy was just definitely a scammer. He goes, I'm just going to put it all over social media. He goes, go ahead, mate. I know that we've done everything right.
Mm. That's the thing. You want to make sure you follow up on all guest complaints. But Absolutely. When someone's taking the piss, it's, you know, you got to draw the line somewhere.
And there are people out there, sadly, that are scammers, you know, like there is thieves and murderers, I suppose.
Correct, yeah. And within the business, obviously we don't want to know numbers, but, I mean, how strict were you guys on wage costs, food costs and things like that? Obviously, as you grew in franchisees, giving them the kind of the tips.
That's right. And again, it's a guideline that we like all of our franchisees to be aware of. In this day and age, and through the last 2.5 years, it's just been so difficult to predict anything and to try and stay on budget. But, you know, you've got your cost of employment, which should be at 27 or 28%, cost of goods at 30%. You know, everything's fluctuating now. So
it's all over the place. Yeah.
I really can't.
Yeah. Do you think it's harder to do business now than it is 30 years ago?
I'd have to say yes.
Hmm.
I'd have to say yes. But at the same time, I'd be really comfortable going into a franchise now knowing that a lot of the franchises that are dodgy have been exposed and have just sort of disappeared.
Yeah. Well, it's easier now. I mean, that's another thing with media, social media. It's easier Correct. To expose people. So do the right Correct. Thing and you never have to worry. So
that's right. So, yeah. Look, I know myself that It takes a special person to be a franchisee. I would probably be the worst franchisee in the world. In the world.
Why is that?
Because I've got my own ideas. Yeah. There's certain people, you know, I would be continually looking for ways to better something.
Yeah, okay.
And that's not a bad thing, but you've got to communicate it to the franchisor so that the whole group benefits, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas I'd just go off and do my own shit.
That's something where you do hear with your franchisees where, oh, we want to improve this, but they won't listen. And then sometimes I'm thinking...
No, we're prepared to listen.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, so yeah, with you guys, were you always on board to take advice?
Absolutely. And, yeah. You know what? We don't run the stores. They do. The franchisees do. So if they come up with a better way, a more cost-effective way of doing something, we'll listen. We'll be foolish not to listen.
Mm. And what's the one store you're most proud of over the last 30 years?
Look, it'd have to be Eagle Street Pier. That's the store where it all started. It's still there today. It's in a prominent location within the CBD on the banks of the river. It overlooks, you know, the Story Bridge, the whole city lights.
Wow.
It's just amazing. You know, watching the reflection of the Story Bridge in the Brisbane River at night just brings back memories of when we used to close at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm thinking... What a magical view, but I'm so tired, I want to go home and sleep.
You're tired, you've had enough, so. Yeah. And have your family, your kids, followed in the path of hospitality?
They've all worked in hospitality, okay, yeah. Good. They've all worked for us at some stage or another.
They wanted their own careers, though? They want to do their own thing? Yeah.
Yeah. I've still got one daughter that works in the marketing department.
Okay, cool. And I mean, how I think it's so crucial that everyone works in hospitality at a young age, just so they can understand, you know, how to treat people,
absolutely,
how to be with people. What do you think about that?
100%, 100%. Everybody needs to go. I think going out for dinner or to a restaurant or to a coffee shop is something that everybody experiences, regardless what level of income they have. Mm. They're going to eat out somewhere,
totally,
in some way. I think that everybody, because of that, should work in the hospitality industry so that they, on the other side, the receiving end of being a customer, and how you should treat, you know, that white person.
Yeah, because, I mean, at the end of the day, you see, like, majority of our staff are female, and you see sometimes where something's not right and the customer blows up, and it's just not nice. I mean, we don't accept it. Obviously, if we will fix the problem, but if you're being rude, we kick him out straight away. But
correct.
That's why it's so important to go through that process as a four-star.
I agree.
Yeah.
So I've always used this method to employ staff. I'll judge you on your personality. I don't really give a shit about your resume.
Yeah,
what you've done.
You can train everyone to do anything, right?
That's right. So. You can train a monkey to do everything, but personality is what I look for.
Yeah, I totally agree,
and I still do.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to how you are as a person, treat people, things like
exactly.
that. So, and obviously, you know, what you've achieved has been amazing. But obviously, with success comes a lot of hard times. We spoke about challenges, you know, that year, 96, 97. For yourself, how have you dealt with all the hard times, and mental health? If you have had any issues, how have you got through it?
I basically, it's a great question, and I've always found myself on the other end of the stick where I look for somebody else that's going through a challenging time to help them mentally.
Wow.
So in a way, it's taking away from my challenges.
Yeah, okay. So you want to help others.
Focusing on somebody else.
Wow, that's a beautiful way to kind of, it's wanting to help them. And
I've got several mates that I talk with on a daily, weekly basis, monthly basis, and I focus on their issues as opposed to my own. I guess I'm lucky I don't have any serious issues, but, you know.
I mean, you're a pretty happy guy, high energy.
Yeah. Fairly positive.
Yeah. That's it. And growing up, going through, you know, building what you've built, and you obviously said when you had your hairdresser salon, you work in hospitality. Have you kept a good work-life balance? Obviously, now you've got a great lifestyle, but were you always able to maintain that balance?
No, not at all. I was working morning till night, probably for the best part of 10, 15 years. Really missed out on seeing my children grow up.
Mm.
It was just something that I had to do.
I mean, your kids look, and that's one of my biggest fears. My parents did the same thing, came to Australia, worked 20, 30 years, never came to any sports games. I never resented them for it because they gave me the future where I'm at now.
Correct.
As your kids got older, obviously you become mates with them and things, but do you see did the kids struggle without not having you around?
No, I've never been sporty type anyway. And we've always had, my wife is extremely sporty, so she loves all sports. So she was quite happy to take them to cricket.
It's beautiful.
To soccer, to football, to whatever. You know, I mean, I remember that I had a Saturday morning off and I took one of my sons, Reese, to a cricket game. While he was at school, because he had to play cricket for one season. And I had a BMW 7 Series at the time with a television screen in the car, so I could watch TV. So I dropped him off at the cricket thing, parked the car, and some of the mums that were there and the dads, they were just all started chatting. I don't know how, but somebody went and got coffee, and we all ended up in my car watching the TV, watching in the morning whatever. While the kids were, and every now and then somebody would just clap, so we'd just all clap.
Just clap along.
So I wasn't there really as a support to my poor son. Yeah. But
I mean, it's to achieve that level of success you achieved, there's sacrifices that come with it.
Correct. So. And I mean, I love all my kids and, you know, and now grandkids and son-in-laws, daughter-in-laws. And they really aren't damaged in any way because I didn't go to see their cricket game or their ballet. Or
it's important that your wife was there for them and be there for them.
That was the sacrifice. You know, I was working and Maria was the mum. And the handyman.
Sounds like my family. So how long was that period for where you really did sacrifice? Was it
the first 15 years of Coffee Club. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that commitment is just amazing, and it has to happen. I mean, it has to happen. So what's some advice you'd give to someone starting out in the industry now?
Surround yourself with people that are smarter than you, people that are as passionate as you, and people that have the same work ethics as you.
That's great advice. Excellent advice. And what are you most proud of over the last 30 years?
Obviously, my family. Yeah, I didn't even have to think about that, but I wasn't sure if that was an answer. But yeah, obviously my family. You know, my kids have all, they've been amazing children to grow up. And I'll take my hat off to my wife for that, because I wasn't there for the first 10, 15 years of the kids' upbringing. They've all grown up to be good people, happy people, great mums. My first son just got married this year, so he's not a dad yet, but he will be, and I know he'll be a good dad. My youngest son is 21, and he's a TikTok nut.
All the dancing and
4 million viewers.
Really? Yeah. Wow. That's another form of marketing right there, isn't it?
Exactly. He's very clever too. I'm proud of the people that they've become, which is great. My daughters both have kids and they're great mums. They're just exactly like their mum. I'm proud of the whole Coffee Club brand that we've created over the 32 years. I'm proud of the associations and the relationships that I've built with almost every franchisee that's been in the group. I'm proud of the relationship that I have with our partners from Thailand. Now, these are people that just walked into our lives. They paid money to be in our lives.
Wow. And credit good to you. Money. Yeah, credit to you.
But they're actually nice people.
Yeah.
So I'm proud of all the relationships and that have been created over the 32 years, all the philanthropic causes and the humanitarian causes that I've worked with over the years. I've done some amazing things. I've walked the Great Wall of China with Olivia Newton-John. I've climbed mountains, Mount Chamonix, Mount Mont Blanc in Italy and France. I've been to the Savannah. I've been to Africa to do a volunteer group and build a school. I've been to India to the coffee plantation that grows our coffee and has won the best Arabica coffee bean plantation in the world.
Wow.
Twice.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah, so I'm proud of all these things.
Mm.
But like I said, I live it and breathe it every day, so it's only when you ask me the question that I think to myself, holy shit, I have done a lot.
Yeah. My brother always says to me, you've got to smell the roses along the way. And
well, yeah, yeah. Look, one of the biggest achievements, I think, and, you know, I just mentioned philanthropic and humanitarian work that the Coffee Club has been associated with over the years. For 17 years, or 20-odd years, I've been going to Perth since we opened our first store. And I saw that Perth was having a telethon. Now, you know what telethon
is,
right?
Yeah, they were call up and...
Correct. So Perth Telethon is the longest running and the highest fundraising telethon in the world.
Wow.
So it's been running for 45 years, I think. Anyway, look, I got excited because I saw telethon and I knew that in Brisbane we don't have telethon, but we used to.
Mm.
And we were involved. I was involved with the Greek community in providing some sort of entertainment, you know, Greek dancing, what have you, and food. And, you know, I know it was a really great atmosphere. So I was thinking to myself, why isn't Coffee Club involved in telethon? So I just made a call and I got through to a lovely lady, Adriana, and I still keep in touch with her today, even though she doesn't work with telethon anymore. Adriana, look, I'm John Lazarou from the Coffee Club. We'd love to come on board and support the telethon. Happy to bring a coffee cart and keep all your telephonists... you know, hydrated with water and caffeinated with our coffee over the 36 hours, because it started on a Friday night and finished on a Sunday night.
Hmm.
However many that hours is. Yeah, whatever. And she said, what a great idea. Now, we weren't the primary coffee shop in... We only had one store in Perth. There was Dome over there, who started there. Miss Maud's, they've got a myriad of brands that are local to the Western Australia, but nobody thought of approaching them.
Mm.
And here am I, and you know, 20 odd years later, we're still supporting telethon.
Wow.
But the great story out of that is we didn't have telethon here in Brisbane. So I came back one year and I was on my high horse because, you know, they had just raised $45 million over in telethon in Perth.
Wow.
And I went to Channel 10, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 2. I went to all of them and said, why the hell aren't we doing telethon? And anyway, finally the CEO of Channel 9 in Brisbane, she says, you know what? I'll give it a go, John. I said, Kylie Blucher, I still thank you to this day for coming on board. Telethon was created in Brisbane, or in Queensland, sorry, across the state. We do the Coffee Club telethon ball on the same night. And I think the last telethon that we had before COVID, we raised $13 or $14 million.
Wow.
And here's something that not many people do know, but because of that, I got nominated as Australian of the Year.
Really?
So it was just a nomination.
That's beautiful. I mean the fact that you're in that... I mean, that's amazing.
But it was just my idea. But the thing is, it's an idea that I copied from Perth. Why the hell aren't we doing it in Brisbane? So we
Yeah, and I think that's beautiful. I think the more successful we become, the more responsibility we have to give back. And I think
Absolutely.
It's beautiful that you've seen something, you brought it here. And
yep. But I'm really fortunate that both my partners, or three partners now, including Minor, are just as giving and allow me to go off and help these various causes.
That's amazing. It's beautiful. And honestly, I think that's the thing people want to hear is the more successful you become, the more you give back.
Correct.
That's beautiful.
And that's 100%.
Yeah. As we start wrapping up, what's the one thing you want your guests to say after visiting your venue, the Coffee Club?
I want them to say to our staff, your service is just as good as John Lazarou's.
I think that's impossible.
It gives our team something to aspire to.
Of course. I mean, if your hospitality it is now like it is at the shops, then that's why it grew, because of what you created there. So what's next for you? I know obviously you're still on the board, still got a lot of energy, you're semi-retired, but what's next in the pipeline for you?
I'm living each day as it comes now because of COVID. It's very difficult to plan.
True.
A year away, let alone tomorrow, because you don't know what sort of restrictions are ahead of us.
Very true.
But I'm dabbling in some other sort of businesses, which is great. I'm doing a lot of consulting work for a lot of businesses. I've got a business with a very good friend of mine, Justine. It's the J&J show. It's on Facebook. Check that one out. John and Jus. And we've gone into various businesses that are looking for different ways of marketing themselves, doing things. Basically, we're just putting a fresh set of eyes on a business that's existing. And we've seen some great results.
That's really cool.
And I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
So
that's really cool. And it's you're giving back as well in that sense.
That's right.
So that's amazing. All right. So the final question on my podcast is another question that off one of my favorite podcasts, Guy Raz, How I Built This. And his final question is, how much of your success do you put to hard work and how much to luck? You kind of answered this before with timing and things, but...
Look, I would say that we opened up at the right time, in the right location, with the right product, price, atmosphere, the whole look. Mm. So is that luck? I don't know.
Well, you put yourself in a position to become lucky, right?
Yeah. Is that luck? I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier about the it's you guys opened, like those long lunches that people were doing and you came in at the right time.
But that's what I'm saying, timing.
But the hard work put you in that position.
Look, doesn't matter how much luck you've got, if you're not prepared to put in the hard work, get ready to fail.
Yeah.
And using the word fail, I love this saying. If you fail to plan... then plan to fail.
Yeah.
Because you've got to have a plan in place.
Yeah, I 100% agree. John, I had high expectations of this podcast and you smashed those expectations. And
really?
Yeah, you really did. And honestly, I'm blown away by your humbleness and how what you've achieved. And thank you for your time, bringing me to your place and letting us do this podcast. So I really appreciate
it. Phil, it was my pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you so much.